welcome to the Insurance Dream. I'm your host, Dave Bowling. Good to be with you today. It is Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. We are talking with David Gabrielson of Capital Premium Finance today about his story, how he went from nothing to over $1 billion in premium financed. Today's episode is sponsored by Brightfire. Brightfire is the way to go, your all-in-one marketing, digital marketing solution. These guys do it all. Go over to theinsurancestream.com, click on services for your agency, click on digital marketing. You're going to see, I always run out of breath when I do this though, but they local listing management, pay-per-click advertising, social media advertising, they build your website, do some search engine optimization, all that stuff. It's all a la carte too. It's super affordable. You should check it out. theinsurancestream.com/digital marketing or services for your agency, digital marketing. We appreciate their sponsorship today. All right, welcome to the Insurance Dream. I'm your host, Dave Bowling, here today with David Gabrielson of Capital Premium Finance. David is the founder, current majority shareholder, I'm assuming, David. Is that pretty accurate? And you can tell because, you know, we talk about you guys every week on the show. You guys are a sponsor. We appreciate the sponsorship. But, you know, we talk about it every week because, you know, we don't have just, you know, any sponsors coming on our show. We like it to be people that we've had experience with that we know, you know, is a good fit for agencies. And we were just talking about before the level of detail that Capital Premium Finance has for our agency. And, you know, for a lot of the other agency owners that I've talked to that use you guys, it's like, you know, big enough to have all sorts of resources available, to agencies and customized plans and customized processes. And I mean, you know, one little example I'll give before we dive in here is there was a field, the broker fee field, inside of, you know, the premium finance when you're building it. For some reason, it kept defaulting over, to pay that to the company or the MGA wholesaler, whoever we're sending the check to, instead of us. And we couldn't figure out why that kept happening. So Capital Premium Finance's tech team went in and did a modification on our login to where it's not possible for that. It grays that field out under our login specifically. Those are the kind of customized solutions I'm talking about. It's like just help streamline things, help make the life easier on the agency owner, which I know all agency owners are looking for that at every turn. So take me back. What year did you start Capital Premium Finance? Let's start there.
Well, I started in 1983, was the beginning of Capital. I didn't use the Capital name until 1988. But as far as financing premiums, I started that in September of 1983, which was 40 years ago.
Sure. So, September 1983, what was the name of the company back then?
It was called Spectrum Mortgage and Finance.
Okay. And so there was like more than one thing that you did at that point in time. It sounds like mortgages and insurance payables or...
Yeah, I was trying to predict the future.
Sure.
I had no idea, but you know, my dad showed me how to finance premiums and that was the main thing. And the word spectrum is multi. Mm-hmm. And so I like the name Spectrum and, you know, the colors and stuff. So, but when my dad showed me to do it, now at one point when I first started, I did do leases. My dad owned some nursing homes and I did some leasing equipment and stuff like that. So I just did it for my dad's properties. And then mortgage, we were maybe buying a discounted note or something like that. But, you know, I maybe had one of them. But that was, you know, 99.9% of it was there to finance premiums.
Yeah. And so what did your dad do that led him to know how to finance premiums? Because that's not an average skill set for, you know, an average American.
Yeah. So my dad was in an investment group. And where guys put their money in, and one of the, there was like six of them. And, one of the six was an insurance agent. And so the company they were working for, actually financed some premiums too. And then, I had just moved, back from, Seattle to Boise. I started Capital in Boise and, I did books for them because I understood I was good at bookkeeping. And so I did their books. So I saw the discounted notes that they had. I saw the leases that they had as I was doing that. And then their company, my dad had all the money and the majority of it in it. And so with time, he just, he just said, "We don't. I'm not going to do this anymore." And so they split up. They just liquidated everything. And so the agency, there were, I think they were doing business with like two or three agencies. But I decided that, after I was doing bookkeeping, I was just going to go out and try it on my own, because I understood how to do that. I understood how premium financing worked, a very small shell of it. Yeah. And but then my dad kind of just gave me the details, and then he showed me how to do that. And so in September of 83, I went and got a line of credit, and I had $40,000 in cash. And I just went to the first agency and said, "Can I find," and it happened to be the, one of the larger agencies. There was some smaller ones too, but the very first big one, was probably the second largest agency in the state of Idaho. So I had no clue what I was doing with $115,000. I thought, man, I'm big stuff. And, I think, so I'm just reading my head. So I had $115,000, and I went to the largest agency and one of the largest in Idaho. And they said, felt bad for me. So they said, yes.
Hey,
so I had one. There was my first agency.
Whatever works, right?
Yeah.
Are they still with you guys to this day?
They are.
Hey, yeah. There you go. I believe it.
I have codes, like A0001, A0023. So yeah, they're number one. Wow. They still are. I still do business with them 40 years later.
That's crazy. So, so walk me through real quick. So you launched it out, just trying to, be an entrepreneur, see what works. And then you this thing starts growing on you, right?
Right.
So what was that growth like, and what were some of the things that popped up that, you had to manage when you were doing this, when you're growing everything?
Good question. So, I had $115,000, and I obviously would run out. But the thing was, is that I understood leverage. I understood, you borrow one rate and you put it out at another. And I didn't go to, I went to very little college, just enough to meet my wife at a tennis class, and I failed everything else. And I came from a really background where, I have 20 cousins on the Gabrielson side, and 19 out of 20 are all minimum of, bachelors and masters and a lot of doctors and stuff. So
are you the 20th?
I was the 120th that never went to college and graduated. I was the only one out of 20 cousins that didn't graduate. But I had learned, I learned how to leverage. I knew 10 key. I knew how to type. I knew how to bookkeeping. And so when my dad showed me how to finance premiums, I just thought, I can do that. And I was 27 years old. And now I just have to figure out, how am I going to earn a living? And it's like, you have aha moments in your life, or you have the heavens open and moon dust and all that stuff. Well, I knew that that's what I wanted to do. I just had to learn how to do it. So I had $115,000 to lend out, and I went to one, my first agency, and then I would go to a second one, and the second said, "Well, who are you working with?" And I would say, "Well, this one." And I didn't have any others. They said, "Well, if you're doing business with them, we like them. They're big. We know who they are." I didn't have a second or third. So, it's kind of got through it. But, and then I ran out of money, obviously, at that amount. And then my older brother, who had a double master's at Brigham Young and was working overseas in Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, I called him up and said, "Hey, Joe, I've run out of money, and I've got a really good thing going. And can I borrow money from you?" And, my dad and him talked and everything. So he ended up giving me $1 million, and I was paying 13% interest. And you have to remember that prime was at 22.5 when I started. So our lowest rate was 28, and, our highest was 36. And so, and then my 40,000 that I had was making, 28 points. And then I was leveraging the rest of it. And then I started in 83, and then my brother called me one night. He said, "Hey, David, I'm being transferred to New York from Kuala Lumpur, and I don't want to live in New York. I don't want to raise my family there. I just don't want to live in New York."
Yeah.
Now, I do business in New York, and I've spoken at conventions in New York, so I'm not saying it's bad. He just didn't want to live in New York.
Yeah, well, it's one thing to do business there, right? Totally different deal when you're thinking about where you want to raise your kids.
To live there. 100%. And so he said, I'll quit my job. You can keep your we'll just take my $1 million you have and we'll leverage it out to the bank, and the bank will give us 10 million, you know, 8 to 10 million. So I said, do it, Joe. So my brother quit his job. I was the president. He was the vice president. I had no education. He had a double master's. And we went to the bank, and the bank gave us between 8 to 10 million. And now that just really rocketed and propelled us. So I started it in Boise, and then, you know, we get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 agencies, 20, 30, 40. And that's just how I started. And, you know, so my first line of credit was 75,000, and now it's 8 million. And that was, we had, and I had to learn. I, like anything, you have to learn what you're doing. You have to learn the hard way. You have to, you know, it's like running a marathon. You can't cheat wind. You have to learn how to finance premiums. And I, you know, I had to learn the hard way. Well, and I got frauded, because insurance and fraud go together.
Yeah.
And you had agents that took advantage of me. And so I just had to learn how to do it. And on the job training was really, really tough. But that's my growth pattern. And then, we got to 1988 and we were 5 years into it, and I got the magical, you know, fraud, big agency fraud. We would capitalize and, you know, we obviously, put all of our, you know, we have to guarantee all the bank notes and the bank lines and everything. And, so we got frauded by one of the biggest agencies in Idaho, and basically started all over. It was really hard, but I learned how to not do, you know,
that's what I was going to ask, like, you know, because at the start, so the majority of people that listen to this podcast are agency owners, and a lot of those agency owners are agency owners who are starting off or trying to grow their agency, not quite where they want to be yet, stuff like that. And so that was one of the things I was going to ask is, were there times throughout Capital's history, and if so, how many? Like, I mean, even ballpark figuring it, or maybe it's just a small number. Maybe it's like, yeah, there was twice. Or, but were there times throughout Capital's history where you thought, gig's up, this thing's over, it's not going to work? Like, I know we had a decent run, but this is just this. We're at the end of the rope here. Were those moments present in the Absolutely. In the early years? And how often did that happen? How many? Give me a couple big ones. That, I mean, that sounds like a pretty big one, right? Where it could have been like, doors are closing, go get jobs.
Yeah. Well, and you have to learn, you know, it's in all sports. You know, you go from high school sports to college, it's a whole different level. You go to college to pros, it's a whole different. You got to learn, and you're constantly learning. Well, I got taken advantage of. And yeah, I just built a home. You know, I had five kids, whatever. I mean, and I just, you know, went home and said, it's just been wiped out and I'm going to have to start all over. Or, you know, and so I remember one time I just sat in bed, you know, and then just kind of like the aha moment again, the spirit and my wife just said, you have two choices. You can sit in bed and feel sorry for yourself, or you can learn from your mistakes and keep going. So I learned from my mistakes and I kept going. And it was hard, but I had to learn that lesson. I had to learn, you know, I joke with people, I'm going to write a book on all the ways to get frauded and when I die, you know.
Yeah.
But that was one of them. And so that's why we changed the name, because we just, you know, we had to just restart. We recapitalized. The agency stayed with us that we had, just except for the bad guy. And so in 1988, we changed the name to Capital. And at the same time, I moved down to, I grew up in Boise, and we started it in Boise, and I moved down to Salt Lake because I had most of the business in Idaho that I wanted. Now, obviously, I didn't have it all, but I had a lot of it.
Yeah, you had good market share, sure.
So I went down to, I had my market shares, but then I said, it's better to go to, you know, sometimes you don't know why things happen in your life, and it's not fair, and it's awful and terrible, but I needed to move to Utah and I didn't know it. And so when we moved to Utah, that was the beginning of, you know, now I've been frauded. I learned how to do that. I knew how to finance premiums. My bank line stayed with us. Everybody stayed with us. The agency stayed with us. It was just me and my family that lost money. And then we just recapitalized and we started all over. And was it hard? Yeah. Was it fair? No. Was it? It's everything, and you have every right to feel sorry for yourself. But you know what? I decided I'm gonna keep going.
And, yeah.
One thing that's been a kind of a whole thing from the very beginning is, my wife had nursed a baby since that night, and she would have me the babies, and I'd be sitting there rocking in the rocking chair, and I'm praying to God, well, how am I going to pay for these kids, and just how am I going to do this? And the Spirit just kept telling me, just keep going, David, just keep going. And that's been my theme for 40 years, just keep going in those tough times. And it's good to learn. And if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you're going to have ups and downs. There's just, they go together, success, failure. And have I been frauded more? Yes, but I've learned every time. And, it's always there. And so, and you just, you learn how not to get it, and you learn how to, we have a whole division in fraud, counterterrorism, as I call it. But that's what I did. I moved to Idaho, or from Idaho, I moved into Utah in 88. And then I had no business in Utah. And within about 10 years, we had almost
Utah.
All of the business in Utah. Had almost all of it. And, my bank lines were, we got 25 million. We just kept growing because we would grow. And, today I'm at 652 million. So
when do you think you guys are going to hit a billion?
I always wanted to finance $1 billion because I thought it'd be really cool.
Yeah. It'd be cool to have a party, right? Like have a big billion on a cake and
Right. But you need, but see everything is, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, everything happens in stages.
Yes.
And my growth has not been like a hockey stick. It's just been consistently big, growing and growing. Okay. But most of your commercial banks will only go up to 50 million. And I got to 50 million and Wells Fargo said, no more money. We won't give you any more. You're not rich enough. And because I had to put $1 in for every 10 that they would put in. Well, then I had just been introduced to a Colonnade, which is a like a real estate broker, but it's a premium finance broker. And I got introduced to them right after, within 2 weeks after Wells Fargo said, we're not going to give you any more money. And then we went met this Colonnade guy. In Chicago, there's five finance companies or five banks in the U.S. that'll buy notes at 100%, and you don't have to put any more money in. But to get into the game, you have to have, well, I said, what is the game? How much do I have to have? What is the beginning balance that you have to require from the banks? 50 million. I was at 50 million. So what are the chances of that? It just, it was just like, wow, Heavenly Father's looking out for me. Maybe this entrepreneur thing is good. And because I was just living by faith constantly. And I didn't want to be limited to what I could make. I didn't want to be, because, my mom and dad, you got to go to school. You got all your brothers and sisters are educated. That's how you get your jobs. And then my dad was wise enough. Said, David's not going to go to school. So what are you going to do? He said, get into sales and, start a company. And so I did. And that's what I did. And
that's good advice.
But that's, my growth just, went from, and then, I'm in the big boys world. We're the fourth largest in the U.S. But there's a big steep curve. It's, for me to have the credit facility, which is $2 billion, is unheard of. And all five of those banks, now there's only really three, but they want to own you after 5 years because they won't let you have their balance sheet. And the current credit facility I have, they bought another bank, and the regulators came in and said, you've bought too big. You've bitten off more than you can chew. You can't commit to anybody for 3 years. Well, I'd already had a credit facility with them, and they came to me and said, David, we're sorry, we can't buy you after all. I'm like, what? That's exactly what I wanted to hear. And but we'll give you a credit facility for the rest of your life because you are our biggest loan at the bank. So I was just really lucky. And then of the 8 to 10 finance companies that are nationwide, there's only two of us that are privately held because to get the money is impossible. And that's, I just navigated through, through the years and years. And then you say, when I financed $1 billion, I financed $1 billion and it took me 37 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
To get to $1 billion. And now I'm 3 years later, I'm $1.5 billion. So,
you guys have $1.5 billion in finance premium right now.
I have financed $1 billion. I will finance $1.5 billion this year.
Wow.
And now remember the difference between what you finance and then the actual hard
right,
money
for sure.
that you have from the bank is about 40 to 44%, right around in there. So I have hard money out of $650 million.
Okay.
And I will finance $1.5 billion, roughly.
That's crazy. So, so talk a little bit about, because I mean, you know, we kind of went through the different stages here. And, you know, you thought it was over, like gigs up, right? And then you listen to your wife.
Multiple times.
I think is one of the wisest things we can do is go and see what our wife has to say, because they're way smarter than us.
The partnership.
100%. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I would never want to try and do anything on my own. And my wife's my business partner too. And I had somebody ask me that the other night. They were like, how do you work with your wife? And what's it like working with your wife? And it's like, you know, at the beginning, it takes a minute to kind of, you know, figure out your groove, right? Figure out like how things, but then, you know, I mean, it's, I'm doing business with somebody, the person that I know the most on the whole face of the planet, like what an advantage, like a strategic advantage that holds. Right. So that speaks to me on that part of the story. What is it like now when, you know, basically you have the opportunity, you're currently living, it sounds like, your insurance dream. You know, these things have come to fruition for you. What is it like trying to manage something that is exponentially larger than what you, started off with? Because there's very few entrepreneurs that can take it from, you know, bootstrap startup to, you know, the $1 billion mark in any category. And I know you said it's constant learning, which that totally makes sense, but like, how is it different now trying to manage all these different things? I mean, is it like, you know, there's like a layer of people that are reporting to you and then layers of people that are reporting to them. And it's just all based on like, you know, hopefully this is good information. Or, I mean, how do you go about managing something so large? Because one of the things that I've noticed and one of the things that I say every week on the podcast is it's impressive to me, the fact that you guys are so large, but you don't feel like a large company. Like when I call, I'm talking to the same one or two people all the time, right? The same problem solvers that I called last time are going to be able to solve my problem this time. There's lots of flexibility built within your systems. I mean, how do you go about managing stuff like that to keep it that small, you know, that small premium finance company feel, but then you've got all the resources of anybody else in the country that you're looking to compete with. How do you, what's the balancing act look like on that?
Another great question. So my dad, would always tell me that the right people will show up at the right time. And, you know, he kept telling me you got to spend money to make money.
Yeah.
And just, you know, going on. And I never thought the capital would be this big. I didn't go into it like I'm going to, you know,
You weren't trying to take over the world, right? Like you're just trying to make a living and feed your kids.
Dollars out, I can make X amount of money.
Right.
You know, first started, I had 3-4 jobs for 7 years. It was just hard because you know, you don't want to do capital, but you know, it's like watching grass grow in your front yard.
So this was a side hustle for you for 7 years.
I was painting houses. I was shaving ice. I was keeping books. I was doing anything to survive. Because I knew that I wanted to do capital. And then one by one, you know, I did a dairy job and stuff. One by one, I got rid of those jobs and I just did capital. But because, you know, when you have a lot of kids, you got to show up with the money. IOUs didn't work. But one thing that was like really cool for me is my wife came from an entrepreneurial background. You know, and if I was married to a librarian, it would be really different. You know, check in at 8 and leave at 5. And you know, there's no, you know, issues after.
It's a 24/7 operation.
Yeah, it is. It's and you personally guarantee the notes. It's everything. And I didn't have an accounting background. I don't have any of that IT stuff. And as you know, we have 170 employees now, and I don't know those stuff. But the right people would always show up at the right time. And you know, my brother and I worked together from 1985 to 2005. He wanted out at 20 years, and because we had to guarantee everything. And he said, David, I want $10 million for my half the company. Well, I didn't even know how to do that and what that meant. But my wife's brother was an investment banker and a private equity guy. So I went to him and he said, David, I've been waiting 20 years, 25 years for you to talk to me. I want to work with you, and I know how to buy your brother out. So everything would happen as it's supposed to happen. And so then I bought my brother-in-law on and I bought my brother out. And that was in 2005. But my new partner, my brother-in-law, was really good in negotiating with banks. So to answer your question, the right people would always show up at the right time when you needed them. And then, you know, a year later, we needed a COO for operations because, you know, we were doing everything manually, and he showed up. And, you know, now we have all our computer stuff and softwares, and that's what he's, you know, excels at. And so you have to realize that people can do a better job than you, that you don't know everything. Yeah. And you just delegate, and then you let them do their thing. And it works really good that way. But it's a day by day, you know, week by week, month by month, year by year. It's a very slow process, and it has to be, because you don't want to grow too fast. Your bank lines won't let you, and you can, you know, I'm calling on 10 people hoping to get one agency, and I might get 10, you know. And but everybody in your business does what they do best. I'm good at selling. I can do that. I like it. You know, our COO does really good in operations, and our CFO can do really good in finances. So to manage all this, you just hire people as you go. And, you know, you start with one employee, two, three, four, 10, 20, you know, 30, 40, 100, 120, 150. And you just keep going. And you have to be very organized. You have to have meetings. You know, you have to have corporate governance. And you just have to let everybody do what they do good at.
So it's the systems.
And it works. I mean, it's here, you know, here we are. Yeah. You know, the accounting guys don't do marketing, and the marketing guys don't do accounting. And we, you know, we're very clear on that. But you have to meet and coordinate. And I still have to do that. I still have to personally guarantee the credit facilities. You have your board meetings, you have everything.
So the systems, the processes, the people, we should do a whole separate episode on how to hire good people. Cause I know that's one of the biggest things. And I mean, you know, it's funny because I talk to veterans in the industry, and they're like, you know, they go into, you know, different boardrooms or different lunch break rooms or whatever. And they're like, yeah, well, I hired the guy that defrauded us at $10 million. And, you know, so it's like, there's no way to guarantee a win every time when you're doing a hire, right? Because it's a very complicated process. There's a lot of issues that can pop up when you're managing people.
You're always going to have that. That's just part of it. And, you know, I've had a really good staff. I have very little turnover. In my bigger positions.
Yeah.
But you have to learn. And I have a lot of my kids work for me.
Yeah.
And they want the company to keep going. And good there's always issues. There's always challenges. And it's how you.
Barbara Cochran from the Shark Tank. That's what she said. She goes, every entrepreneur I've ever met in my entire life, it's just solving one problem right after the other. And we just did an episode here not very long ago about, you know, because a lot of people's kids don't want to go into the insurance business, right? And my wife and I were sitting at a conference listening to this guy, and he was a surgeon. And he was talking about, you know, how his kids didn't want to go into the medical field. And he was like, you know, just bewildered by, like, why wouldn't you want to? Like, look at, you know, what I've... And then he figured out it's because... As an entrepreneur, we're constantly, you know, talking about the problems, the pain points. Like, we're not talking about the things that go well, right? Oftentimes, our time and our energy and our attention is devoted to the problems and ironing those things out to make the business keep growing. And he realized that that's why his kids didn't want to go into it. So then we changed that with our kids. And now our oldest daughter's working for us. Our second oldest is like, I want to try and do, you know, music as my career. But, you know, insurance is certainly on my radar, which if you would have asked a few years ago, it's like, it wouldn't even be like, I'm not going to do that. Over my dead body, am I going to do that? So, that's been a big shift too. But I think that goes kind of hand in hand, as there's always going to be a problem that you've got to solve. What would you say, because we've got a couple minutes left here, what would you say if you could give one core fundamental, piece of advice that all other pieces of advice would branch off of? What's that one core thing that entrepreneurs that are looking to do something like what you have done, what's the center of it all?
Well, there are several things.
Okay.
Never give up.
Yeah.
You can keep going. Follow your heart. Listen to your aha moments that you have in your life. Cause I can tell you how I was programmed, how I was supposed to do capital, how it happened, and if I look back and say I've done it for 40 years, I can do it for another 40 years. and you'll have such passion. And that's another one, have passion. Do what you like. It's not how much money you make. And it's not, it's what you do with your money that's important, not how much you have.
Yeah.
And be honest. Be humble. Be honorable. There's just a lot of things. It's hard. If you think it's easy, don't do it. It's just, like I said, that's a hard question because there's a lot. I just be, listen, be humble, listen, pray to God every day for help, for guidance, because it is a calling. And I mean, I absolutely love what I do, and I wouldn't want to do anything else. But if I said it was, has it been easy? It's been not easy. It's been just the opposite, but the rewards far exceed how hard it is. And you just keep going because you're driven by it. You have that passion and you have that help because you're helping a lot of people. I mean, 170 employees, and if everybody has an average of, four or five in the family, you can start to see the influence you have. Share your wealth. Realize that it's not you that did it. It's your employees. Treat them, they're just as important as anything. So there's a lot of it. That's a really good question. There's not just one thing other than, follow your heart, do what you enjoy and that you want to do. That's important. And once you find it, you'll know it.
Perfect. Well,
I can talk forever.
When we booked this call, that was what I thought, boy, we're going to have to really manage time because your gal that booked the call with me, she said, he said to tell you that, we'll have to keep on track because he can go on and on and on. And I'm like, boy,
I can tell you, I can go on and on.
I'm the same way. So at some point in time, I understand you guys have like some properties for capital and stuff. It would be so cool because I think you and I could probably talk for an entire weekend. I was like, boy, this could be a dangerous podcast to record. We're going to have to be really diligent. Yeah.
You have to be different.
Yes.
Why are they going to buy insurance from you?
Right. Yeah.
They'd be fighting somebody else. Somebody's going to find it. They're going to finance their premiums with someone. Why? I got to do me.
Yeah.
And so you got one chance to dance with Miss America.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to do the right. I'm going to do things that nobody else does and get it, attention and work harder and all that. And so you have to do things because if you walk up and go, hey, Miss America, I can do the same thing as Mr. America. She's not going to switch.
Yeah.
So you got to think of stuff. That could be another episode.
And I think it would be cool to develop because I got those master classes and stuff because it's just, there's so much wisdom there after 40 years. Right. Mm-hmm. And then there's, there's so much that has changed and so much that you guys have had to keep up with as far as the changes mm-hmm. go, because there's a lot Absolutely. Of businesses in the last 40 years that have been left in the dust, not because they're bad businesses, but just mm-hmm. because the adaptability was not there to make the necessary changes.
Exactly.
Gosh, you guys went through the internet coming online. I mean, you were probably faxing loan premium finance agreements back and forth, before with like a manual rate table, right? Is that what you did?
Yeah. And call in and write in the numbers with three-part NCR paper. I mean, you're talking basic. And you got to keep up with the Joneses. If you don't, you'll go out of business.
100%. Well, David Gabrielson, thank you so much. I appreciate Absolutely. It. And I'm looking forward to having you back because this was fun. It's an inspiration to people hearing these kind of stories. So we definitely appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining
You're
us.
You're welcome. And I just want to thank you for your time and considering me. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
And I'll participate whenever I can.
So. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.